We've been talking about social media and its impact. We've also been talking along with that about social media and, well, the numbers of people using it. And we have a lot of people using social media. Again, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 billion people. We're going to take a listen shortly to someone who will be talking about the number of people using social media. And more specifically, we're going to be listening to why some people are actually quitting social media. But before we get there, I want us to take a listen to something else. You know, we talked about previously how there are some reports indicating that, you know, depression and things like that can be exacerbated as people are using the social media quite a bit. All right, so let's take a listen now to some of the discussion about people's use of social media, starting with a whole look into why some people are actually choosing to quit social media.
I'm not sure whether other people on the tube would be happy, but I look at other people more. I like to observe, have a look at what someone's wearing, you know, imagine what sort of person they'd be, just try and live in the moment a bit more.
That's right, no Facebook, no Twitter, no Instagram, no WhatsApp.
What triggered it was a breakup. I think when something like that happens, you need to just let someone die a social media death and just remove them from your life. And then I realised that actually they weren't that useful to me anyway, so I just went the whole hog and didn't bother using them ever again.
The point about social media is the addictiveness. Nobody really wants to spend hours and hours every day updating their status and seeing what other people think about them. Nobody consciously wants to do that, but those behaviours are themselves addictive behaviours. Once you're trapped in that loop, it's very hard to break out. It's not that we want to go back to some idyllic past, an Eden before the machines existed. It's that we need to take control of these machines and use them for their proper ends.
36% of the UK population is not active on social media. 36%.
The bad thing is that you think people's lives is much more fun than your own life.
When I'm on the bus, I just see people like zombies, and I'm like, right, there is a sun. It's a sunny day. There is snow. There is something to see. Not only your phone, you know.
I like to be present when I share something about myself with someone so I can get their feedback and either stop right there or tell them the story behind it or give context. Sometimes I might withhold a certain opinion rather than being kind of rapid fire because maybe it requires a bit of nuance and maybe the best thing is not for me to just shoot my mouth off online because some headline made me angry. The thing is, the world is real whether we want to believe it or not, and it's really important for us to have a sense of where we are in that world.
I don't like to use the term social media at the end of the day because it implies that it's designed to promote social behaviors when usually it's designed to promote the amount of attention that we're giving it. In order to grab our attention, because there's so much competition, design has to appeal to the lower parts of us, to the kind of non-rational, automatic, impulsive parts of us. And so this is why we get things like clickbait, like sensationalism, things that appeal to our outrage. And there's a whole industry of consultants, of psychologists who are helping designers really punch the right buttons in our brains so that we do keep coming back for more and we do stay hooked on the products. You know, at the end of the day, they're advertising systems, not really social platforms.
63% of the global population is not active on social media.
Some of them take social media breaks quite a lot anyway, so it's not like I'm doing something that's particularly divergent, but they think it's a good thing. I think they realize. We all realize that we look at memes too much, we use Instagram too much. It's just whether we realize that and do something about it. There are things that give us, you know, instant pleasure, and they're like the more gluttonous things like food and sex and stuff like that, and they give us a really high spike of pleasure. But the things that are the most worthwhile are the things that you spend a lot of time on. So playing the piano is not pleasant to begin with, but you get like a much more steady wave of satisfaction. So it does matter, because the pleasures that are sometimes the most time consuming or the ones that take the most work can be the ones that are the most fulfilling. Those are the pleasures that are self-actualizing, that help you realize a part of yourself you didn't have.
A part of yourself that you didn't realize you had. Wow. You get to know yourself better. What do you think about that? If you were to reduce significantly, let's say by 70%, the time that you spend on social media, would you feel comfortable? Would you feel awkward at first? Would you be concerned about what others would have to say about your decision to spend such little time on that social media? Let's listen to a bit of something else that has to do with how we are interacting and relating or not relating to each other nowadays.
I can't remember the last time I made a phone call. I don't think I've ever done that in my life.
He doesn't think he's ever made a phone call in his life.
Never. I don't think it's ever come up.
Generation Mute is the phenomenon where we actually see young people prefer to text and use social media to communicate rather than pick up a phone or have a conversation with each other.
I talk to my friends on WhatsApp, Twitter, sometimes, or Facebook Messenger, just anything that's typing. Days upon days of messages. Obviously, calling is the easier thing to do, but I just don't like it.
One US study found that 92% of teens don't use...
For me, phone calls are actually the worst.
Phones to call.
She realized how awkward I was on the phone and she asked me, I don't want to put you in a position where you're uncomfortable. Is there a better way to contact you? And I said, yes, via email, please. I don't know how to handle that side of me very well.
It's a lady from Dubai.
I still feel quite a bit weird talking to them and hearing their voice and hearing them, you know, give real responses to things. I don't like it, but I know that it's an important part of making connection with someone.
Text-based interaction is hard because you lose everything that you have.
There's a neuroscientist and speech expert talking now.
You don't have a face, you don't have a voice, you haven't got emotion and intonation and all the other stuff you're hearing in somebody's voice when they're talking to you because you just have words.
1 in 3 job applicants don't have the oral and communication skills that they need, according to a survey.
It took me 5 years to answer a phone call from my boss. When I answered the phone to her, she's like, oh, Darren, you answered. I'm like, yeah, surprise.
The problem for employers is that this generation mute is very much a generation of people who are most comfortable typing and not talking. What we've noticed is there is a change. You used to bring someone in, you would automatically assume they'd know how to answer a phone. And now, those basic skills are skills that we have to train. In a place of work, then voice is king.
Can you imagine that, ladies and gentlemen? People are truly uncomfortable talking on the phone to the point where this young man said that he wouldn't even, for years, respond when his boss called him. Oh, if she sent a text, it was all good. Wow, where are we headed? Where are we headed? We got to think business. We got to think industry. We got to think family. We got to think religion. Where are we headed? They were talking with people, young people from all over the world. Where are we headed?